Prabhupada very often in his commentaries pushes the point that bhakti is the highest. Bhakti over the last hundreds of years, people have not often recognized the position of bhakti, thinking that it was a means to the end of impersonalism. This is due to the propagation of what people think of as Hinduism by the Indologist and also by the previous Swamis and translators of Vedic literatures and Bhagavad Gita who have gone to the West. They think that the goal of so-called Hinduism and the goal of spiritual life as propagated through the Vedic culture is impersonal. It is formless. So Krishna or Sutta Goswami has described that yes, the absolute truth has that aspect. And if one approaches the absolute truth through jnana, through his own powers of intelligence and renunciation, one can achieve that vision of the absolute truth. But actually, there is more to the absolute truth than that. And that more full, complete understanding, vision, relationship, awareness of the absolute truth, that comes through bhakti, by the mercy, by the divine grace of Krishna. Just like if we see a mountain in the far distance, we may mistake it even for a cloud. When we come closer, we may get a glimpse of its form. But when we are very intimate with that mountain, we can walk up it, we can see the wonderful trees and flowers and birds and parrots and animals that are there, and the sages who are living in that mountain. So from a distance, we just get a vague idea of the mountain, and similarly from a distance, without intimacy, we get a vague glimpse of the absolute truth, that there is nothing separate from the absolute truth, and it is one with everything. True, but not complete. It can be said it is even imperfect, because it is incomplete. When one gets closer to the mountain, one sees its form, that it has form. And similarly, when one gets closer to realizing the absolute truth, one can understand the Paramatma feature through yoga. But through bhakti, the absolute truth reveals itself fully, its full personality, his full personality. And then one knows everything about matter and one knows everything about spirit. So this second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita describes the path of karma that leads to bhakti, that everything leads to bhakti. And in the verse that the final verse that we heard yesterday, this Srinvatam Svakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtanam Ridhyantastoya Badrani, that all the abhadrani, the inauspiciousness, is removed from the heart by Krishna, who is within the heart himself, ridhyantisto. He himself removes the anarthas, those things which are not truly valuable that we are grasping and holding on to as our own. He himself removes the basic anarthas. How? By the process of shinvatam, Svakata, Krishna's own kata, the topics about Krishna. By hearing the Bhagavatam, Krishna becomes very inclined to remove these anarthas. And then, when the anarthas are removed, when the inauspiciousness is no longer within the heart, then one can become fixed in bhakti. And that fixedness in bhakti is described in the next verse, text 18.
Nasta praesha badresu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati tamasloke bhakti bhavati nashtiki.
By regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam, so this is Bhagavat Seva, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Nityam means eternal, but it also means daily or regularly. So by regular attendance, doing Bhagavat Seva, so there's two kinds of Bhagavat Seva, by regular attendance on the classes of the Bhagavatam, and rendering service to the pure devotees. So this is both varieties of Bhagavat, the person Bhagavat and the book Bhagavat, because Bhagavatam means in relationship to the Bhagavat, to the Supreme Lord, to the Absolute Truth. So the devotee is in relationship, all his activities are in relationship to the Supreme Lord, and the book, the Bhagavatam, everything is in relationship to Krishna. There is nothing external of Krishna presented in the Bhagavatam. So by regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam, this is Bhagavat Seva, and by rendering service to the pure devotees, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed. In the previous verse, we heard how anarthas are removed through hearing. So when that hearing is further carried out by regularly, continuously hearing the Bhagavatam and serving the devotees, the exalted Vaishnavas, engaging in Bhagavat Seva, then nasta prayesha, praya means almost, abhadresu, the same abhadrani, the same inauspicious elements, the same anartas, they are removed still further by this process. As the process continues, they are removed still further until they are almost completely removed from the heart. Destroyed, practically speaking. Almost completely destroyed, as Prabhupada translates it. And then, when the anarthas, the impurities are removed from the heart, almost completely, bhaktir bhavati naishtiki, then one becomes continuously, irrevocably established in bhakti. That means that one is nishta, bhakti or bhavati naishtaka. One is fixed. Practically speaking, at that point, one is practically liberated. Practically. Full liberation will come later, as we will hear. But at that point, one is practically liberated. Because due to the absence of abhadrani, the inauspiciousness, the anarthas, one is fixed strongly in devotion. So Prabhupada explains, here the remedy for eliminating all inauspicious things within the heart, which are considered to be obstacles in the path of self-realization. Here is the remedy. The remedy is association of the Bhagavatas. There are two types of Bhagavatas, namely the book Bhagavata and the devotee Bhagavata. Both the Bhagavatas are competent remedies, and both of them, or either of them, can be good enough to eliminate the obstacles. A devotee Bhagavata is as good as the book Bhagavata, because the devotee Bhagavata leads his life in terms of the book Bhagavata. And the book Bhagavata is full of information about the personality of Godhead and his pure devotees, who are also Bhagavatas. So book Bhagavata and person Bhagavata are identical. The devotee Bhagavata is a direct representation of Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead. So by pleasing the devotee Bhagavata, one can receive the benefit of the book Bhagavata. Human reason fails to understand how, by serving the Bhagavata, the devotee Bhagavata, or the book Bhagavata, one gets gradual promotion on the path of devotion. But actually, these are facts explained by Sri Narada Dev. We won't speak much about Narada now, but the story of Narada is fascinating, and in the oncoming weeks we will hear about Narada Muni, and actually his life, as we will hear it, it is an expression of these verses of the progression of bhakti. His life lives this philosophy, how he progresses from the beginning of sadhu sangha, Shraddha Sadhu Sangha, and then progresses all the way up to the point of Prema Bhakti. So what we're describing here, or the Bhagavatam Sutta Goswami is describing here, will be exhibited in the life of Narada Muni. So then, after one, by serving either or both of the Bhagavatas, continuously hearing, and the anartas are removed, and then one becomes fixed in his devotion. Irrevocable. He's fixed. Naishtiki. His devotion is firm. Then what happens? That is described in the next verse. Tada rajastamo bhava kama labhadayas taye chaita eta na vidam stitam satve prasiddhati. Then, as soon as irrevocable loving service is established in the heart, when the anartas are gone, as soon as one is fixed in nishta, then, because one... It is not that one, in the, as described in the last two verses, Srinvitam Swakata Krishna Anasta Prayesha Badrisu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, it is not that the hearing and chanting of Krishna's glory stops. So while these different stages are being described in their different ways, we understand that that continues. Because that is the nourishment for bhakti. That is the water for the bhakti lata, the creeper of devotion, devotional service. Without that hearing and chanting, one does not make any advancement in devotional service. Rather, one's desire to hear and chant intensified. Because what stops that desire from manifesting now? It is so many other desires, so many other things we have to do that distract us. Those are called rajatama, actually. Not rajatama, actually, but rajatama. The mode of passion and the mode of ignorance. Because due to the mode of passion, there are so many other things that we have to do. Have so many desires. I have no time to do this. I have no time to hear. Because there's so many. This is due to the mode of passion. This especially manifests when we sit down to chant japa. Then the mode of passion gets turned on, and that's called vikshepa. Vikshepa means distractions. So we think one thing, and then another thing, and another thing, and we can't make the mind peaceful enough to hear. And the affectation of tamagun is the sleepiness that comes. So we go back and forth very often between thinking so many things and snoring. And very rarely is the mind just simply settled enough to hear the Maha Mantra. So for one to advance, that hearing of the Maha Mantra has to become very, very strong. And therefore, in this verse, stitam sattve prasiddhati, that one becomes fixed in sattvagun, not rajagun and tamagun. Rather, rajagun and tamagun, passion and ignorance, are removed. So as soon as irrevocable loving service is established in the heart, the effects of nature's mode of passion and ignorance, such as lust, desire, and hankering. In other words, there is further cleansing by the process of chanting and hearing and serving. The heart is cleansed still further by that process because of the absence of these lower two modes of material nature, passion and ignorance. So these other anarthas, so this is the third stage that is occurring of this anartha, the anarthas being removed, that lust, desire, hankering, they disappear from the heart. Then the devotee is established in goodness. And when established in goodness, after hearing and chanting, one goes through two different stages in that. First, due to the effects of raja and tama, passion and ignorance, and all the distractions and all the sleepiness, we cannot truly get a taste for Krishna's names. We cannot listen carefully. So therefore we cannot get a taste for Krishna's names. But soon as Tado rajastama bhava kama lobhayas chaye, soon as these lower modes are moved down, they're destroyed, one is fixed in his hearing and chanting, and the result of that is that ruchi comes. Ruchi means a taste really comes. So there is anishtita bhakti, which means that the bhakti is unsteady. And then by hearing continuously, Krishna removes the anarthas, the inauspiciousness from the heart, and then one becomes fixed. And then by the continuation of the hearing and chanting, that fixedness begins to get sweeter. And that is called ruchi. Now in ruchi, there is still effects of impurities. One's taste is there, but it's not fully developed. Sometimes when one has a taste for chanting, one's mind will still wander. But by the strength of one's intelligence, because one has a taste, one recognizes the fact that one's mind is wandering. Now, because our taste is minimal, when our mind wanders, we follow it quite willingly, because we get more taste out of going where our mind is going than focusing on the holy name. But in the stage of ruchi, when the taste is actually there, when Krishna is beginning to manifest his holy potencies himself through the holy names, because of the lack of rajatama, because of the focus of the devotee on it, then one, when one's mind wanders, one brings it back by the strength of intelligence, and he's thinking, oh, I should be doing my chanting now. I'm chanting now, so let me focus my mind. So his mind is on his practices of bhajan or his practices of sadhana. But then by that process of having a taste and continuing, then one gets still more purified. Because one is in goodness, one still gets more purified. And that more purifiedness, that means that his taste increases still further. And that is called asakti. Asakti means that one has an attachment. One truly has an attachment. In ruchi, one has a taste, but one's attachment isn't strong. Practically speaking, when the nature of asakti, attachment, means that you cannot live a moment without Krishna. It is so developed. It is an exalted, advanced stage. And rather than one's mind wandering away from Krishna's name, Krishna's form, Krishna's pastimes, when one's mind wanders, it wanders to Krishna's names. And the attraction for the devotee on this stage is not so much, oh, now I'm chanting, so I should chant. And that's not the force behind his focus. Rather, the force behind his focus on Krishna's names or the Bhagavatam or Krishna's form is simply Krishna. His own attachment to Krishna. So this is the result of this asakti is the result of chanting, continuously chanting and hearing the Bhagavatam, and the lower modes of material nature are minimized to such a degree that one is fixed in the pure mode of goodness, the Brahminical platform. But that is not the end. Prabhupada explains this in the purport. Explaining that he really moves it in his purport, he moves it to the next stages. So I'll read that after. The effects of devotional service become manifest by complete elimination of the effects of passion and ignorance. And then the devotee is at once fixed in the mode of goodness. But then he has to make further progress to rise to the position of Vasudev, or the state of unmixed sattva, or Sudha sattva, or Vishuddha sattva. That platform, which is described in the next verse, means it is different from the mode of goodness. The mode of goodness is pure, but it is matter. But the spiritual Vasudev platform is much, much, much more wonderful. Vasudha sattva of the Vasudev platform. And what that means is that on the platform of asakti, one is chanting, one's so attached to Krishna that one's consciousness becomes saturated by the spiritual energy. And that's basically the Vasudev platform, or the platform of Vishuddha Sattva. Because of the one, it's like the consciousness is like a sponge. When the sponge like consciousness is absorbed in matter, it's one thing. But when the consciousness is absorbed always in Krishna's names, then it becomes completely permeated with the spiritual energy. And that's the Vishuddha Sattva platform. So the next verse describes Evam Prasana Manaso Bhagavad Bhakti Yogita Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam Mukta Sangasya Jayate. So this evam thus means thus established on the platform of asakti. Thus on that platform, then he becomes established in the mode of unalloyed goodness. Evam Prasanna Manaso. He becomes established fully on this Vasudha Sattva platform. Thus established in the mode of unalloyed goodness, then the next thing that happens, Bhagavad Bhakti Yoga, Evam Prasanna Manaso. Evam Prasanna Manaso means that the mind becomes fully enlivened. Pranaso, yes, Prabhupada translates it as enlivened. Now the mind and everything, our consciousness is covered. So the process of devotional service is a dual process of getting rid of the coverings and also establishing the connection with Krishna. So on this platform from Ashakti, and this verse describes both bhava and prema, and in prema one actually sees Krishna. So on that platform, one on the bhava platform, the consciousness makes that connection. Evam prasanna manaso. It makes that connection with Ladini Sambit, Krishna's internal energy through direct service. Because in Ashakti, one's attachment to Krishna is so great, and one desires nothing, not the smallest material benefit. One doesn't think that one can get anything from the material world. One is just simply absorbed and attached to Krishna. Practically, it is like one is feeling like a fish out of water. What is a fish out of water thinking? Yes, he is. He's flapping his gills. Get me back in the water. That's all he's thinking. Water, 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 water. So the person on his akti, he's just thinking, Krishna, Krishna, where is Krishna? And then by Krishna's mercy, that connection is made. That's called the bhava platform. Naturally, coming from the purity and the saturation of the consciousness. In the spiritual energy. That's evam prasanna manaso. And then this Bhagavad Bhakti Yogita. Yogita means connection. So this, the devotion, he's connected by the contact, he makes contact with the devotional service of the Lord. Up to that point, we're making the attempt to contact Krishna's service. We're attempting, we're trying. When we're immature and have so much passionate ignorance, our attempt is sometimes weak, it's sometimes strong, it's partial, we also want other things. And then, that's anishtita. Then, by the process of hearing and chanting and serving, then that's the some of the anarthas go, then our attempt becomes stronger, fixed, continuous, and we are irrevocably trying in a fixed way. Up to that point, it's like walking up a mountain carrying so many unwanted things, rocks or so many things, our tape recorders, our computers, our cars, we're struggling. We have so many attachments and we're trying to walk up the mountain carrying all these things. Walking up a mountain is hard enough. What to speak if we're carrying things? So gradually we drop them and then we sort of get to the top. We're free, we've thrown everything, we've dropped everything, we're only carrying the most valuable thing, that desire to go forward. And then, practically speaking, we're a nishtha, it's easy, because you're fixed and have no material attachments. And then when one has ruchi, a taste, one wants to go to that place. No one has to, quote, preach to us and convince us that this is what we should do. We have the taste, we want that thing. So we start running down the other side, so to speak. And then when we're attached, asakti, it's like we're nearing home. and we only have one thing on our mind, we want that and nothing else. There is no place like home, back to home. We're getting the fragrance that we remember so dearly, and we want that. And then we're thinking about it and thinking about it, and then the first contact is made. And that first contact is called bhava. Bhava is called, Vaishnava Rupa Goswami, Premankor. Ankor means like seedling. Bhava is really the beginning of devotional service. Now we are aspiring to be devotees. We're aspiring to be Vaishnavas. But then on the platform of bhava, then one actually is a devotee. One is actually a Vaishnava. So that's so evam prasanna manaso, the mind becomes enlivened by that contact. It's like coming to life again. The travel has been away, anadivahimuk, since forever practically, time immemorial, and then he's finally contacted home. He's not quite there, he hasn't. Love it, but he's made the contact and he's enlivened. He's practically come back to life after having wandered on the desert for so many years. And then, Bhagavat Tattva Vigyasa Vigyanam. This means that he gains positive scientific knowledge of the personality of Godhead, which our acharyas have described that at that point he gets positive knowledge, he meets Krishna. He is home. He sees Krishna. This is called prema bhakti. And this positive knowledge is knowledge of Krishna's form, knowledge of true knowledge of Krishna's pastimes, experience. He actually experiences that one, Krishna's qualities, Krishna's beauty. And it's called Shakshadakar. He has direct experience of Krishna. That's prema bhakti. This is Bhagavat Tattva Vigyanam. He has Vigyanam. He realizes that it is not theoretical. He sees Krishna. And then mukta sangasya jayate. Then finished. Finished with material life completely. That is the Vaishnava, the real Vaishnava stage. This is prema bhakti. Prabhupada explains in his purport. One has to surpass the brahminical stage. He starts back a little further. That means the stage of goodness. And reach the Vasudev stage to understand the personality of Godhead Krishna. Because unless one is on that devotional platform, one cannot actually understand Krishna. The science of the personality of Godhead is the subject matter for study by the postgraduate students in the spiritual line. Foolish men, or men with poor fund of knowledge, do not understand the Supreme Lord. Practically speaking, they cannot understand the Supreme Lord. Like a blind man trying to understand a great artistic work, a painting. A blind man can't understand it. He doesn't have the right conceptions. He doesn't have the ability. He just doesn't simply have the ability. And similarly, a person who is not purified, he cannot actually understand who Krishna is. One cannot understand until one is on that stage. And these people, and the tendency is there, they interpret Krishna according to their respective whims. The fact is, however, that one cannot understand the science of the personality of Godhead unless one is freed from the contamination of the material modes, even up to the stage of a Brahmana. One has to surpass even that and get to the Vasudha-sattva stage. And then when the qualified Brahmana factually becomes a Vaishnava, that's evam prasanna manaso, comes to the stage Bhagavat Bhakti Yogita and connects with the Lord, then he's a Vaishnava. When a qualified Brahmana factually becomes a Vaishnava, in that enlivened stage of liberation, he can know what is actually the personality of God. And then he actually comes to the stage of prema. And he sees Krishna. So what is the effect of seeing Krishna? Next verse. Vidyate hridaya grantis. Vidyate means pierced. The hridaya grantis, the knot within the heart, the false ego, the misidentification with the body, and the turning our back on our identification as Krishna's servant, this is pierced and finished. This is the result, actually, of seeing Krishna. Finished. Material life, the essence of our material life is this false ego. If we think we have problems with our mind, the problems we have with our mind are nothing compared to the problems we have with our false ego. False ego is that reflection of our true identity within matter. This is the root of the problem. This is the problem. Our false ego, misidentification with anything but Krishna's servant, Krishna's loving servant. So this is the first effect. When we see Krishna, prema bhakti, this is completely cut, this false ego, because we're fully established as Krishna's loving servant. And then, chidyante sarva samsaya. Samsaya means doubts. Sarva, all doubts are chidyante, they are cut, due to this direct realization of Krishna. And then, chiyante chasya kamani, there is no question of any material activity anymore. All karma is finished. Only completely spiritual activity, loving service to Krishna. And then drishta eva natmilishure. This means that drishta means we see. We see the self. And what is the self? Either you think of it as the self being, one sees the self that I am Krishna's servant, or one sees the Supreme Self and understands that I am His servant. Either way, when one sees oneself, one sees the Supreme Self. And when one sees the Supreme Self, one sees one's own self. Because the relationship is that we are the servants of Krishna. Thus the knot in the heart is pierced. And all misgivings are cut to pieces. All doubts, misgivings, troubles, difficulties, any last vestiges of the shadow of any anartis or pride or aparad or anything, all cleaned away by seeing Krishna. All misgivings are cut to pieces. The chain of fruit of action, savakamani, chiyate savakamani, is finished, terminated completely. We no longer have anything to do with the material world. And then one sees the self as master. Prabhupada explains in the last paragraph of his purport, this enlightenment perfectly enables the devotee, this enlightenment is seeing Krishna, perfectly enables the devotee to distinguish spirit from matter, because the knot of spirit and matter is untied by the Lord. Krishna himself unties it. This is how he unties it. We see him, he shows himself to us. This nada is called ahankara. And the examples of this, Dhruva Maharaj is an example of this. When the Lord came to him, he had been performing austerities with great devotion, and the Lord came to him, and then he touched him with his conch shell. And Dhruva Maharaj, even though a young boy, his body was completely spiritualized. That meant that he no longer, practically speaking, was in a material body. He had no identification with the material body, he was in a spiritual body. And the same thing happens to Narada that we'll hear about in the sixth chapter of this canto, that immediately his spiritual body is awakened. This happens at the time of his death. His spiritual body is awakening, like lightning and illumination occur simultaneously. Because now it is bija, it is there as a seed, our siddhadeya, our spiritual body. And then it will this is us. It will completely manifest by Krishna's mercy. So as soon as the knot is loosened, therefore, all the clouds of doubts are at once cleared off. One sees his master. One sees his master, Krishna. And fully engages himself in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. That's prema bhakti, making a full termination of the chain of fruit of actions. In material existence, a living being creates his own chain of fruit of work, and he enjoys the good and bad effects of those actions, life after life. But as soon as he engages himself in the loving service of the Lord, prema bhakti, he at once becomes free from the chains of karma. His actions no longer create any reaction, because all his actions, they have nothing to do with the material energy. They only have to do with Krishna's loving service. So there are no material reactions for that. So therefore in text 22, it describes the glories of rendering service to Krishna. We just heard the glories because they bring one from the point of karma, of work, up to the point of directly seeing Krishna in prema. So this is the glory of devotional service. So therefore, ato vai kavayo nityam. Ato vai kavayo nityam bhaktim paramayo muda. Therefore, what intelligent person will not always do what? After understanding the glories of bhakti yoga, what intelligent person will do anything else other than bhaktim paramayo? Render devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Muda means here, it's not mudha meaning foolish or anything. Muda means with great, great, great relish. With great delight. Knowing, either in the sadhana stage or the perfect stage. In the sadhana stage, one realizes that this is the result of pure devotional service. And in the perfect stage, one is realizing it. So therefore, since time immemorial, all transcendentalists have been rendering devotional service to Lord Krishna, the Personality of Godhead, with great delight. Vasudeva Bhagavati. Unto who must this devotional service be rendered to? Vasudev. With great, great delight. Because such devotional service is enlivening to the self. The self comes alive. Now the self, ourselves, the soul, is fast asleep, dreaming. We're something that we're not. But by this devotional service, as we heard, the self actually comes alive. So it's enlivening. That is the meaning of the word enlivening. Coming to life.
Now, what I would like to do is complete the class by reading from Srila Vishwa Chakravarti Thakur's Madhurya Kadamani and his description of Prema Bhakti. Part of his description of Prema Bhakti, after the devotee sees the Lord, what is his reaction in Krishna and how Krishna deals with him. Now, practically speaking, as we heard, it is not possible for us to really understand this. But by the mercy of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, we can get a glimpse of the intensity of spiritual experience of Prema Bhakti. So this is after he's seen the Lord. He's actually seen the Lord, as we heard over here. This is Bhagavat Tattva Vijnana. To completely relish the beauty and other qualities revealed by the Lord, the enlivened devotee savors them, the qualities of the Lord, over and over again. Most astonishingly, their sweetness increases more and more. And the devotee ascends to higher and higher peaks of experience. Then continually realizing the unheard of sweetness of the Lord's bhaktivatsal, the Lord's kindness to his devotee, the devotee's heart begins to melt. The Lord, showing his kind nature, says, "O my best devotee, many births you have given up wife, house, and wealth to attain me. For the sake of my service, you have endured untold miseries, such as cold, wind, hunger, and thirst and pain. Maintaining your life by begging, you tolerated countless insults and abuses from other men. In return for all your sacrifice, I'm unable to give you anything. I've simply become your debtor. Rulership over the whole earth, lordship over the heavens and mystic powers are unsuitable for you. How can I give them to you? No, no. Grass and straw, the delight of cows, I cannot give to any man. Though I'm unconquerable, today I have certainly been conquered by you. Now I'm taking shelter of the creeper of your excellent character and gentle conduct." Is the Lord speaking to the exalted Prema Bhakta devotee. Receiving the sweet loving words of the Lord as ornaments on his ears, the devotee says, "O my Lord, my Master, O ocean of mercy, you glanced upon me while I was being bitten by swarms of crocodiles, the endless miseries amidst the terrifying current of birth and death. Thus mercy rose as the sun and melted your butter-like heart. O Lord, transcendental to all the worlds, in the form of the spiritual master, you destroyed ignorance and lust. The Sudarshan chakra of your darshan cut apart those crocodiles and freed me from the clutches of their terrible teeth. To fulfill my desire to serve your lotus feet as a maidservant, you placed the syllables of your mantra in my ears. Destroying my suffering, you purified me by constant hearing, chanting, and remembering your name and glories. Through the association of your own dear devotees, you made me understand how to render service to yourself. Still, being ignorant, the lowest of the low, I've never served you even one day, my Prabhu. Though such a miserly, selfish person deserves to be punished, instead you made me drink the sweet nectar of your darshan. O great master, you made me feel shame by saying from your lotus mouth that you have become my debtor. Now what do I do? My offenses number 5, 7, or maybe 800,000 millions. I can definitely say they must be more than trillions. Would I be arrogant to ask you to pardon all of them? Just let all the reactions to my past sins remain, intense and long-standing, suffered and yet to be suffered. Just one day before, I was rudely comparing your dark limbs to the fresh monsoon cloud, the blue lotus, and a sapphire. Your beautiful face to the moon, and the tenderness of your feet to newly sprouted leaves. Now, having seen your real beauty, I realize that by my poor intelligence, I was clearly offending you. I was trying to compare a useless mustard seed to the golden Mount Meru, a chickpea to a touchstone, a jackal to a lion, or a mosquito to Garuda. Thinking then, I'm praising the Lord, my inept poetry became famous amongst common people. But now, that for one moment I behold the splendorous beauty of your Srimurti, before my very eyes, I am ashamed. My words of comparison are like the teeth of a restless cow trying to defile the desire creeper of your beauty, but they are unable to do so. In this way, the devotee praises the Lord in many ways, and the Lord becomes extremely pleased with the devotee. Then especially for the devotee in a conjugal relationship, prayasibhav, the Lord reveals as far as possible his entire Vrindavan Dham, along with his loving pastimes according to the devotee's desire. The Lord shows him Sri Vrindavan, the desire tree, the Mahayogapit, the chief of all of his beloveds, Bishabanu Nandini Sirata, along with her Saki such as Lalita and her Manjaris, his own friends such as Subal, the cows herded by him, the Yamuna River, Govardhan, Nandishwar Hill, and forests such as Bandira. He then reveals Nanda, Yasoda, and all his brothers, friends, servants, and the Brijbasis. Revealing all these imbued with excellent rasa, the Lord plunges his devotee into an enchanting tidal wave of bliss, and then he suddenly disappears along with the entire entourage. Then, regaining consciousness after some moments, the devotee, anxious to see the Lord again, opens his eyes. But not seeing the Lord, he begins to cry. Was I merely dreaming? No, no, I wasn't dreaming. I have no drowsiness, nor any heaviness in my eyes from sleep. Was it an hallucination? No, for hallucination could never give such bliss. Was it from some defect in the mind? No, the symptoms of a distracted mind are absent. Was it with the fulfillment of some cherished desire? No, no. Material fancy could never approach what I have seen. Was it a fleeting glimpse of the Lord in the heart, Spurti? No, because all the past visions of the Lord that I can remember were never so vivid. In this way, plagued by various doubts, the devotee falls on the dusty earth, praying again to have darshan of the Lord. Hankering over and over for darshan, but not obtaining it, he laments, he weeps, he rolls on the ground, he wounds his own body, he faints, he recovers, he stands, sits, he runs about, he wails like a madman. Sometimes he sits silently like a sage, sometimes like a social misfit, he fails to do his daily duties. At other times he talks incoherently like a person possessed by a ghost. Then if a devotee friend comes to console him and asks privately what is the matter, he explains to his friend what he had experienced. The friend exclaims, "Oh, my friend, what good fortune. You had a direct meeting with the Lord, Bhagavat Saksadkar." Satisfied with this explanation, he recovers for a moment and becomes happy. Then the next moment he again laments, "Oh, why can't I again have the Lord's darshan? Was it just a shower of causeless mercy from some crown jewel of Mahabhagavatas upon this worthless soul? Or was it the fruit of some so-called service done by a worthless soul like me, who, which according to the logic of a letter caused by termites, resembling real devotional service. Or perhaps the Lord, who is compassion personified, bestowed his causeless mercy on such a wretched ocean of faults as myself. Oh, what to do? By some indescribable fortune, the Lord came into my very hands. But then, due to some grave offense, he slipped away again. I'm helpless. My mind is reeling. I can't understand. Where shall I go? What should I do and how? Whom to ask? The three worlds appear totally empty and hold nothing for me. Without shelter, I feel like I'm being devoured by a scorching forest fire. Giving up worldly association, I'll stay alone for some time to think. Doing this, he laments further. O lotus-faced Lord, overflowing with streams of sweet nectar, your beautiful form is bedecked with a garland of fragrant forest flowers, scenting all the forest and intoxicating the bees who hum about. Just for one moment, may I see your lordship again. Having once tasted your sweetness, I aspire for nothing else. He begins to roll on the ground, breathe heavily, faint, and lose his mind. Suddenly, seeing the Lord everywhere, he rejoices, embraces, laughs, dances, and sings. When the Lord again disappears, filled with remorse, he weeps. He spends the rest of his life behaving in this strange way, and no longer knows whether he has a body or not. He is unaware when in due time his material body passes to the elements. He understands only that his worshipable Lord, the ocean of mercy, is directly manifest, leading him to his own abode to engage him in his personal service. Thus the devotee reaches the final goal of life. Shri Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur ki jai. Shri Suta Goswami ki jai. See, the great sages of Namasharanya headed by Shri Shonaka Rishi ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. See, Kartik Mas ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Prema Bhakti ki jai. No questions. So, we'll continue. Have to start at the beginning again. Hare Krishna.